You're listening to CJAM 99.1 FM, Windsor, Detroit. Hello, you're listening to Pro Bono Radio on CJAM 99.1 FM. I'm Brandon Fragamini, and this is...
Graham Hutchings.
Thanks for joining us. So a quick recap of Pro Bono Students Canada. If you're tuning in for the first time, I would like to welcome all listeners. And we have no idea where who you are and where you are, probably in this area though. We're just going to hit you with a quick recap of what our organization, Pro Bono, is all about.
So we're a couple Windsor Law students here, and since Windsor Law has a focus on social justice, Pro Bono fits in perfectly with its work to match law student volunteers with organizations to deliver legal services, which are a great need but lack sufficient resources to retain legal counsel.
All Pro Bono projects operate under the supervision of a lawyer, so you know they're legit.
And Pro Bono not only provides law students with volunteer opportunities to develop legal skills, but also has a positive impact on the legal profession.
Before we get into discussing any legal topics, we just want to come right out and let you know that anything said on this show is exclusively our opinion and do not reflect CJAM as a radio station.
We also want to let you know that you can catch any past episodes of Pro Bono Radio online at www. You probably don't need to put that in. CJAM.ca in the archives.
Easier said than done, eh, Graham?
I would say, try typing it. Jeez.
Yeah. All right, what are we talking about today, Graham?
I'm really glad you asked me that, Brandon. We are talking about real estate.
Real estate.
We're talking about real estate.
Just talk about real estate.
Yeah.
Okay.
Residential, commercial, and everything in between, except there's nothing in between. And, you know, it's always a hot topic. I come from Toronto. Oh, just got to put that out there. You know, you can turn the radio off now if you like. and I certainly know that real estate's always on the tip of our tongues. But the problem is no less pressing out here in Windsor, as I'm sure many of our listeners know. And maybe those across the river in Detroit who are tuning in don't know. Mm-hmm. There's a bit of a housing crisis in Windsor.
Yeah, there is. It seems that it's gotten real tough for people to find places. The vacancy rate's quite low.
Absolutely. It's pretty interesting because, you know, during the 2008 recession, Windsor had a 15% vacancy rate, which was actually the worst in the country. I mean, I'm sure all our local listeners know and remember 2008 and the recession and all that entailed. However, vacancy rate is now at 4%. Well, it was in 2015, and it is shrinking even more.
Actually, I got some more up-to-date numbers.
Hit me with them.
Yeah, so it looks as though there's a 6% vacancy rate on average, but that's for bachelor units. Mm. For a two-bedroom unit or for three-bedroom units, we have 1.9% vacancy rate, or for a three-bedroom unit, 1.5%, which is very low.
Yeah, generally speaking, the threshold is below 2.5% is considered a crisis. So I don't mean to instill any panic in our listeners, but it seems that we're in a bit of a crisis. And it's interesting because simultaneously, you know, you have all this talk of, you know, what a wise investment the Windsor housing market is. The Financial Post a couple of years ago ran an article with the headline, "Sneer All You Want, Vancouver and Toronto, Windsor, Ontario's recession-ravaged Rust Belt city is turning into the country's hottest real estate play." I just want to go on the record.
That's a nice, that's a good tagline right there.
Just want to go on the record and let you know how much I hate that headline. Who's sneering in the first place?
Yeah, that's what I want to know.
Yeah,
it's another episode. But I guess the thing is that it's almost like there's two different markets, right? I mean, we're going to be talking about commercial real estate and in a little bit, but it seems like there's two different markets because it seems like it's relatively healthy for people who are buying.
Certainly. Yeah.
But people who are renting, especially in that two-bedroom, three-bedroom kind of area where there's a lot of families that are trying to rent, it's become a real problem to either move from same places that you're not happy with, or you're moving into town. It's not easy.
Absolutely. It is not easy out here for tenants. And we should let you know that we are both tenants.
We are. And it was interesting trying to find a place.
Actually, a small anecdote. Brandon and I first met on the August long weekend when we were both down in Windsor looking at the same apartment, of which neither of us chose.
Or knew each other at the time.
Yeah.
And yada, yada, yada. Here we are.
Doing
a show. So it
on the air.
But that situation was interesting to me. I was, so what they, because the market is relatively bad for renters, we were in that kind of situation where they'd have there's like six of us coming in and they'd kind of put the pressure on like it was some sort of bidding, for a prize possession, and they kind of put a little bit of pressure on us to be like, you should probably nab this place now, or you're going to lose it. And so I don't know. We didn't really experience. We weren't too impressed with the place, so we didn't do any bidding. But rental bidding is a thing that happens when the vacancy rate is really low, and it becomes a problem for affordability for people. You're kind of pricing out. You're pricing out a lot of people.
Absolutely. I mean, between June 2017 and June 2018, according to the Windsor Star, the medium cost of a two-bedroom apartment, this is renting in Windsor, jumped nearly 10%. And 10% might not seem like a lot, but when you tie that to inflation, that's actually that's an enormous jump for a calendar year, putting us up to $930 a month, apparently.
Where'd you get that from? What was that?
It's from the old Windsor Star.
Windsor Star. That's where I got a couple things of mine. On CBC, they were talking about the rental bidding idea and that to kind of go off of the idea of the 10% jump there. There's jumps daily because sometimes the listed rental price is kind of like the starting bid for the rental bidding. So it's really, it's not, whatever it says, which might be high anyways.
Absolutely. Yeah, and it can be even more skewed when you get a lot of these landlords posting listed rents, deliberately low, in an attempt to spark a bidding war, and then if they don't get the bidding war, they'll just walk away. Say they found someone else or take it off the market for a month and then put it back on. Mm-hmm. Nefarious tactics we all need to be aware of. Not trying to throw all the landlords under the bus, certainly, but just letting you know. So I'm sure plenty of our listeners have also noticed the other rental market that has not recovered quite so quickly in Windsor is the commercial rental market. I'm sure we all know there are plenty of blocks, plenty of spots of commercial real estate which are still sitting empty and have been empty for quite some time now. But yeah, that's a totally different kind of tenancy, and we're not going to get too deep into the legalese of it. But residential and commercial tenancies are basically they're governed almost entirely differently. There are different laws, different institutions dealing with them, and commercial tenancies is governed by the Ontario Commercial Tenancies Act, which outlines the relationship, the rights, and obligations between commercial tenants and landlords, and we certainly want to steer clear of coming out and giving anybody explicit legal advice, as that is not yet in our wheelhouse. Hopefully will be at some point.
Yeah, maybe one day.
If everything goes according to plan.
I do have a bit of a question, because you're talking about just relating it back to rental prices. Is there anything in your research that kind of compared the Windsor market commercially to other places in Canada, in terms of prices or anything like that? Is it cheaper for people to get in here to own commercial real estate?
Absolutely, it is. In Windsor, it is quite cheap to both get into commercial real estate as a tenant or a landlord, and it's hard to get a ton of comparisons simply because it seems like the only people writing about this are the Windsor Star and the odd charitable CBC article. But generally speaking, it is still an extremely cheap commercial real estate market. And, you know, that affects a lot of different neighborhoods across Windsor. Ford City is the one that really stands out as kind of the height of commercial vacancy. I mean, one drive down Droulard and I mean, you'll kind of get a sense of it. I think there's a lot of a sense within the local community, within the business community, that the worst is behind us and we're kind of, you know, moving forward. But, you know, there's a Ford City group that's wants Windsor to pick up this thing that Hamilton was doing called a vacant building registry as a way to kind of stimulate urban renewal. It's a group called Ford City Neighborhood Renewal. Sorry, let me try that one more time.
Easier done than said, yeah, I guess, for you for today.
Yeah, try saying Droulard a couple times fast. That's a local axiom I picked up, or idiom, I should say. The group is called Ford City Neighborhood Renewal, and they think they have the answer to the what the Windsor Star describes as the area's scourge of abandoned properties and widespread blight. A lot of colorful language used to describe just the situation in Windsor.
Yeah.
A lot of adjectives.
A lot of sneering, apparently, as from that previous article.
Yeah. Anyway, the gist of this would be that owners of properties that remain vacant over extended periods would be required to have them listed after paying a registration fee and then being charged annual fees. It's basically incentivizing landlords to get off their butts and try and get their properties rented.
Is there any information there how that's worked out in Hamilton or how long it's been rolled out?
Yeah, I know that, so they adopted it in Hamilton in 2010. It was a bylaw, and it required the, if a building was vacant for more than 90 days, they had to pay a fee of $240 followed by a $600 annual registration fee. Which is, you know, not super severe, but ultimately could result in a decent amount of revenue and act as kind of an incentive. People don't like spending money on effectively nothing. And, you know, translating that to Ford City, which is close to 70 vacant buildings.
Wow. That's quite high. How big is Ford City? As you can tell, neither of us are locals, so I actually don't know.
But we're certainly open to learning. I don't know exactly how big Ford City is. If I were to ballpark it, I would say it's about 5 blocks wide and 15 to 20 blocks north-south.
That's pretty, all right. That's like...
It's a sizable, but I mean, that's Droulard is the main commercial drag, and then pretty much everything stemming west of that is residential. Mm-hmm. And then just east of that, you've got the now shuttered plant.
I think it's really important to have safeguards like that in there. I know in Hamilton, obviously where this came from, having a where my parents live and where I grew up is right beside Hamilton. So I spent a lot of time there and they had the same issues where rent was going up, prices were going up, but there's still a lot of investment commercially. But a lot of people were sitting on things and pricing people out. And I know the vacancy rate, I don't know off the top of my head, but I know it's quite low there too. So having moved here, I saw a lot of the same things that I was seeing happen in Hamilton, and there's a pretty rich community there pushing for new innovative projects like the one you just mentioned. So it's cool seeing that get adopted here.
Definitely. And I think that if commercial landlords were better versed in the law, they would realize that, kind of commercial tenancies don't necessarily have the same rights as residential tenants, and commercial landlords don't necessarily have the same obligations that residential landlords have.
No.
And I think that there's probably a lot of commercial landlords wary of getting a business in for fear of being unable to evict them or, other related concerns. But generally speaking, it's better to have someone in your space than no one at all.
Yeah. I mean, and for the health of the area, you want to attract things. You don't want them sitting empty. Even if these projects, like the one in Hamilton, the one starting are hopefully going in Ford City is not implemented, you still don't want them sitting there, right?
Mm-hmm. And I mean, you know, everything from in a commercial tenancy, there is no standard government issued lease. You know, you can create your own lease agreement. And that, while obviously has the potential to be predatory, also has the potential to, really kind of meet the needs of both the commercial landlord and the tenant.
Hmm.
And you can be a lot more creative. The previous Wynn government instituted a standard residential landlord tenant lease that kind of everybody should be building off of. And if you're presented with something other than that,
I wonder how that's worked out.
Be wary.
It's just kind of coming up. I haven't done the research on it. I wonder how that's worked out on the ground for experiences for tenants, or if there's been any workarounds. I don't know if you know anything about that, but
I honestly don't know much about that. I'll be quite frank, but I do know that you can, even if you're given a lease, you can just go online to the Ontario government, hold it up against what would be the standard lease. And basically make an argument for excluding anything that's been put in there that goes beyond the standards. Again, it's tricky being a tenant. Sometimes you're faced with a lot of, external pressures, again, like the threat of a bidding war or, that someone else is coming to look at it at 3 o'clock and that sort of thing. I just mean that in a commercial tenancy situation, there's a lot more room to kind of try and meet the needs of both the landlord and the tenant. And in a place like Windsor, where we do have this quite high commercial vacancy rate, it would be good to see kind of, more creative arrangements being worked out just to start filling these vacant buildings,
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting. We should have somebody knowledgeable in that in commercial law on at some point.
Yeah, I'd love that if we could maybe get a.
It would be interesting.
Get a guest on.
Speaking of that,
mm.
We're gonna be having the pro bono one of the pro bono projects with the Windsor Youth Center coming on in a couple minutes.
We certainly are.
What can you tell me about the Windsor Youth Center, Graham?
Oh, boy. What can I tell you about the Windsor Youth Center? Lots. So the Windsor Youth Center is on Wyandotte. I can't remember the 1247 Wyandotte. It's open from 5 to 10, Monday through Saturday. And it's a program of the Downtown Mission. You're probably thinking right now, well, that's quite the pivot from commercial real estate to the Windsor Youth Center. We're going to tie it all back. Don't you worry. The Windsor Youth Center serves the basic and immediate needs of homeless and at-risk youth in a safe and friendly atmosphere. And kind of their mission statement is they aim to foster positive change and growth. They have a whole host of projects. It's, they do have that 5-hour drop-in 6 nights a week.
That's quite good.
That's pretty good. But they do all sorts of stuff. They do a lot of one-on-one help. They will help you with housing applications and apartment searches. All sorts of stuff like resume writing, OSAP applications, Ontario Works applications, getting ID, replacing your ID or your birth certificate, you know, just really, really fundamental things that I'm sure a lot of us take for granted that some of us aren't able to take for granted.
Exactly. Yeah. It's great that there's a lot of, seems that there's a lot of good projects in Windsor since I've been here, especially for youth. So it's really nice.
Absolutely. I mean, they've got other stuff, you know, like they do a dinner at 6:30 during their drop-in. Like if you take away food and hygiene project products, access to laundry and computers and stuff like that. And I think like a lot of it is kind of just a place to hang out, place to get out of the cold, just a place to kind of drop in and be yourself.
Which is if you're listening live on
Friday,
February 1st, we're doing it a bit early. It's pre-recorded. But suspend your disbelief for a second and pretend it's live. It is absolutely freezing, and I believe it's going to be freezing in a couple days.
Oh, yeah.
maybe
oh,
forever.
Oh, yeah.
So I want to have a little bit of fun before we get into the interview.
Sure.
I just want to, because you're a storyteller.
Sure.
You like to weave a yarn.
I'll spin a yarn.
This is no way any sort of reflection of landlords or tenants or anything. I just kind of want to know one of your, if not craziest, experiences as a renter.
Absolutely. I could do you one.
Oh, yeah.
One is a residential tenant and one as the manager of a commercial tenancy.
There you go. Both sides.
How about it? I used to live in Kingston, Ontario. You know it well. All my listeners, I'm sure, you know, the Limestone City, 3 hours east of Toronto. And I lived in a house of which there were six of us. And it was, you know, just kind of really falling apart, but we were paying quite cheap rent. Not Windsor cheap, but Kingston cheap, which is pretty good. We moved in the summer. It was bliss. We had a balcony. It was fantastic. The temperature started to drop. And so we took a look at our heating for the first time. It was all electric baseboard heaters. And we got our first heating bill back. It was over $1,000.
No, was it?
It was over $1,000. So this is hydro. Talked to the landlords, and they effectively told us to put saran wrap over our windows. And we were like, cool. And then we took a host of drastic measures such as not heating the hallways, just heating our bedrooms individually, and we would scurry from room to room. These ice cold hallways.
So you're telling me the saran wrap didn't work?
I'm telling you, saran wrap can only do so much.
I guess, yeah.
And we managed to whittle that bill down to just under $700 a month. So suddenly our cheap rent for six months a year,
though.
It was nuts.
Yeah,
it was like trying to cook eggs in this kitchen that was 4 degrees.
Yeah,
you know, but that's the way it is.
Well, that's a fun time.
Yeah, it was great. And you know, we were young. We didn't even think about asking about that sort of stuff beforehand. But it's always a good idea to ask what the approximate heating bills, hydro bills, and all that sort of stuff are before signing the lease.
And I would bring a thing of saran wrap and put them all just on windows just to test it out.
Mm-hmm.
And see if there's still a draft.
Yeah. And yeah,
that's the test.
navigate your world with a roll of saran wrap.
I do.
Yeah.
I do. Anyways.
You never know.
Yeah. Now, what's your other, as a commercial?
As a commercial, I was managing a bar as a cocktail bar in Toronto for all those out there.
I think anybody, if they've made it this far about all these conversations about Toronto, are just gonna, these guys coming
yeah.
to Toronto. Cocktail bar.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
They're sick of us already. But this story might be good, so hold on.
I mean, I felt personally targeted when Doug Ford explicitly described there's something to do with pinky raising, cocktail sipping, downtown elite. And I was like, oh, geez.
Why do I feel bad about that?
Yowza. No, I was managing this cocktail bar, in fact, Doug. It was just incredibly hot in the summer. just brutally hot, and we were trying to get a new ventilation system put in, get some air conditioning going, and essentially we had to pay for all of it. I mean, it really depends on what the lease says, but if an issue's not addressed in a commercial lease, basically the tenant is on the hook, because landlords are really only responsible for maintaining structural elements like the roof, the walls. That's about it. So again, we're not entitled to dole out legal advice. But it's just worth noting that unless it's explicitly included in the lease, the tenant is likely responsible. I mean, that can be everything from replacing a furnace to a hot water heater to putting in the AC. Anyway, so I was kind of, we balanced the books and we said, it's going to be a hot summer. We just threw the windows open and that was that.
Did you put saran wrap
yeah,
over the windows?
Yeah, yeah,
I think
yeah,
it works in heat.
Yeah.
And it's like cold.
It's like that, you know, what is it, a terrarium? When you're when you're a kid and you put the saran wrap over the plant and the water just goes up to the top and then drips back down.
That's was what you were living in.
That was my life.
I have a, well, I'll make it quick, but
I'd love to hear
I have
it.
One.
Yeah, yeah.
When I was living over in the United Kingdom.
Oh.
So
we're getting fancier by the moment.
I know, I know. We're just, who are we? Reminds me of that show Nightmare Tenants, Slum Landlords on Netflix.
That's a
It brings me back sometimes when I watch that because it reminds me a lot.
That's a great show,
it is
on Netflix.
Yeah.
So stop watching.
It's not even advertising. We're just talking because they're not paying us anything.
Yeah, and it's pretty deep in Netflix. You know, it's hardly like front page.
I'm not sure what
Fyre
Festival. I'm not sure what I searched to get there, but or what I watched to have that be suggested, but. I was living in a place and I had a weird work schedule. I think it was like a Tuesday and it was probably about 10:30 in the morning and I was still asleep. And I hear this bang. I'm on the third floor. It's a tall kind of like triplex apartment kind of thing. First floor apartment, second floor apartment, third floor is my apartment. And I hear this bang at my door. No one ever comes up there. So I was like, what is that happening? And, answer the door, and it's a guy. I'm like, who is this guy? He's like, come downstairs. I live downstairs. He kept this place, but hardly ever lived there. And he had been gone for, I think, maybe 4 months. There had been a leak from my tub and my shower for that four-month period, and his entire kitchen ceiling was now basically his kitchen.
The ceiling was the floor?
The ceiling was the floor, I certainly had nothing to do with that, so I was fine. But yeah. I felt really bad for that guy.
For sure.
It was pretty dire.
Was he directing some of his animosity towards you?
No, he was cool. He was cool. He knew he was just like, don't shower until we figure this out. And I was like, well, I don't know how I'm going to deal with that. But I don't know how it ended up working out. So we'll see. But it was pretty bad.
That is bad. But yeah, they have actually over in England, they have some pretty wild landlord and tenant rules derived all the way back from the feudal system in terms of mm-hmm. squatters' rights.
Oh, yeah.
And all sorts of stuff. So check that out.
Great.
Yeah.
I will.
Okay. I should just really quickly note, we're going to move on we're going to go to some commercials and move on to our interview as well. But all that discussion about Ford City previously and 70 vacant commercial buildings and all that sort of stuff, there was very recently, just a few weeks ago, City Council did approve a community improvement plan that was pushed for by a bunch of kind of community advocates. There's a bunch of financial incentives coming that are going to include grants for exterior maintenance and rental unit improvements. It's a whole kind of incentive package called the CIP that both CBC and the Windsor Star have written about. I give credit to the Ford City Neighborhood Renewal Committee for getting that off the ground. A similar plan was actually really successful down in Essex proper, Essex the town, where they offered incentives to commercial or, you know, improving the exteriors of commercial buildings. They managed to put something like 9 new commercial businesses in on their main street within a year.
Wow.
And yeah, so Essex, shout out to Essex if you're listening. We hear you. We know you're on the rise. Respect.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So now we're just going to we're gonna hit you guys up with some commercials, and stay tuned.
The Green Bean Cafe is a hybrid space for artists, academics, and any others looking for a safe and open atmosphere to hang out, meet up, or do work. We offer a full food and drink menu with daily specials. And with a wide range of weekly events, the Green Bean Cafe is sure to fill the void. The Green Bean Cafe, supporting Pockets Full of Change since 2009. Located at 2320 Wyandotte Street West. Find us online at greenbeancoffee.ca.
The free drop-in community center for homeless and at-risk youth in the Windsor-Essex area. The WYC assists people with many important things, such as replacing identification, housing applications, apartment searches, and resume writing, as well as providing meals, snacks, and a safe space for youth to come together. The Windsor Youth Center is located at 1247 Wyandotte Street East and is open Monday to Saturday from 5 p.m. until 10 p.m. For more information, visit their website at thewindsoryouthcenter.org or give them a call at 226-674-0006.
Okay, welcome back to Pro Bono Radio. We are now joined by two guests who are working on a pro bono project, which they're going to tell us a bit about. So please, let's start with just introducing yourselves and tell us a bit about yourselves.
I'm Nathan. I'm in 3L. I have an interest in social justice advocacy and environmental law.
I'm Elizabeth. I'm in 2L, and I don't necessarily have an interest. I like things that are more commercial-based around corporate, so that's what I'm interested in.
Very cool. We just want to start with a couple icebreakers. Why don't you tell us your favorite thing about Windsor?
I'd say definitely the shawarma.
The shawarma?
Yeah.
All right.
Where's your go-to shawarma spot?
I don't know. I'm a pretty good fan of Mare Nostrum. It's just like, what, 2 minute walk? And it's
nice good, and close.
Yeah, nice warm food right away.
Absolutely.
I think it's all the friends that I've made here and how we all come together and just make most of our time here.
How about you, Brandon?
Fair thing about Windsor?
Yeah.
Partying.
I don't know. Detroit is cool.
Yeah, Detroit is my answer.
No, I do like Windsor. Food's good.
Yeah, speaking of food.
Good pizza.
And I mean, I know we got Mare Nostrum on there, but we were also just curious, what's your favorite place to get a warm meal in cold, cold weather like this? Are you guys like soup, pho, ramen, meat and potatoes? What's going
shawarma.
On?
Shawarma.
Well, I like usually go with friends down to Beep and Bop just off of Wyandotte.
I love that stuff.
I feel like I'm not adventurous in Windsor, and I think I go for Italian, so we go to Spago a lot.
Spago.
Yeah, Spago's yeah. also good.
I definitely, yeah, Spago's good.
I moved here in at the end of August, and I think I've been to Spago 5 times.
That's the usual.
I live like right around the corner. Cool. So keeping it kind of on you guys for a minute, what was your experience like finding housing in Windsor?
I would say I got really lucky in first and second year. It really came down to the wire of finding like the perfect place, because otherwise I would have been in a really tight situation. I was able to I live like 5 hours away, so I was able to like drive the same day as I found the ad and pretty much put the first and last rent the same day, meeting my landlord.
That's great.
Mine was less smooth. So I didn't come to Windsor before orientation week, so I didn't know what Windsor was. And I came here and it was a culture shock to me. I ended up having a roommate first year, and I didn't have my car here, so that was problematic. So it made me kind of want to be on my own this year. So this year I found a place, but it's so much harder to find a place that's, they're not making you pay more than you should on rent, parking spot, that you don't have bed bugs there. Mm-hmm. So it's really tricky, and I feel for people that have to come and find places here.
Yeah, I did that same thing where, as you kind of, like, where I just booked a bunch of places, like, the week of, came for a weekend, because I live, about 4 hours away, and just, like, went to, like, 8 showings, and then was just like, hey, I actually found a really, really good one, but I'm like, we're going to have to try to get some here.
We were telling our passionate listeners earlier that we actually met in August looking at the same house, which neither of us took, but here we are. Okay, so let's talk about this project for a little bit. Can you explain what you're working on to us?
Oh, yeah, there you go.
I'll go first then. Well, basically what we're working on is just like a very brief, easy to understand pamphlet that will guide young people who are going to this youth center on their rights and obligations as tenants, because the idea of this youth center is to help young people get back on their feet, and so one of the things that is to help them is to educate them on what they need to know when they do find their own place.
So what we had was one of the facilitators at the youth center. She sent us a bunch of questions that are commonly asked by the youth with landlord and tenant issues. And we've kind of been looking at them and researching and kind of going about how we can answer them in the best way, that we're not giving legal advice, but we're also guiding them in the right direction that they can do their own work, because a lot of it's relatively available online as well.
We were actually wondering that because we have to kind of skate the line when we're talking about stuff on ours. And do you find that difficult, providing information but not legal advice, and like kind of finding that line?
Yeah, a little bit, because sometimes, like, for certain problems, you just want to say, well, this is what I think. Like, you know, I'm a law student, and I can read the law, so I can come to my own opinions on it. But you just can't do that. You have to give it general enough that you're not giving them advice, but also specific enough that it's actually helpful information.
Mm-hmm.
And you guys were mentioning before we started recording that you both have some experience kind of dealing with some landlord-tenant stuff. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
So most of my stuff with CLA last year was landlord and tenant, and it's a lot of issues that come up between, they're just disputes and people don't know how to go about it, and I feel like that's a really big problem in Windsor, and I know that at CLA, I don't know how it is now, but I think that's always common and people are always confused. So I think having a background and seeing where some of these problems are, some of them are petty, some of them can be resolved without having eviction or whatnot, and we're trying to help it.
Yeah, like I think some of these problems can be as simple as trying to ease tensions between our clients, the tenants, and their landlords, because sometimes it's just a really difficult situation. But other times it can be more complicated, like where there's actual money on the line. Like I've done some cases where there's substantial amounts of money being claimed for whatever maintenance issues, damage to property. I know last year there was a lot of like bed bugs and mice, and some people just don't know what they're allowed to do in those cases, and so we just try to help them and try to see basically try to get them some money to help them back on their feet after that.
I guess with like the vacancy rates now too, a lot of people might be apprehensive to look into those things and see what their rights are for fear of like either eviction or having to leave.
Yeah, because a lot of the time, like what we were saying, the housing market here is so difficult to find. And most people I know had, people I knew in law school had LTB problems because they had bed bugs or mice. And it's so difficult to know what your rights are, but then also trying to find a place to go. And there's finding that line of, can I leave and what should I do? So we try to help them as best as they can, what the landlord should do in that situation to kind of avoid eviction or having to leave or finding a new place.
Mm-hmm. That bed bug problem is seemingly ubiquitous across like southern Ontario and even into Montreal. Mm-hmm. there was a place in Montreal, like a meat packing place, and they offered like freezers that you could essentially move your whole apartment, like all your property, into the freezer for 72 hours and then take it out. And it was like purported to be bed bug free.
That's a solution.
Yeah, that's one way to do it.
I know last year in the library, like second semester, they had to close off the bottom floor because there was like a bed bug problem.
Wow.
Yeah. It was like for a couple days. So
nowhere is safe. What do you think are, and again, we will steer clear of giving legal advice, but what do you think are some of, in assembling your pamphlet, some of the most common questions that people have about their kind of rights as a tenant?
I think eviction's one of them, because I knew when I was working at CLA, a lot of them were informed notice of eviction, and a lot of stuff can be bypassed because it's not paying rent. You know, some landlords are more lenient, some are more to the point where they didn't get their rent off a day and then they push for eviction, whereas other ones kind of like give you time. So kind of that's a big one, I think. And I don't know.
Yeah, like just another thing is just what a tenant is allowed to do in their unit. Sometimes landlords will try to put on additional rules that the Residential Tenancies Act doesn't provide, and other times the landlord may just try to bully them, but of course that's when kind of community legal aid is supposed to step in to just say, no, these are the tenant's rights, they're allowed to do this in the unit.
I know it's a really common problem in Toronto. Did you see or have you seen instances of people kind of being duplicitous in claiming that they want to move into the unit as a, like an easy way of getting people out?
I haven't seen that, but I know that it's a common thing, because even when I was doing the research for a pamphlet, like how do you kick out a tenant, right? Because you technically, even if there has to be something huge that they do that you can evict them, but if you just don't like them, it's kind of, you can't. I don't know if you've seen that, but.
Yeah. Well, one of the times that I was at the landlord-tenant board, I saw a hearing where that was the issue. I won't give any specifics, but it is one of the ways that a landlord is permitted to evict a tenant. And so it is the landlord's right if they can establish this. And so it can be an issue where, are they doing it properly? Is it fair to the tenant?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a big issue in Toronto because, like, all the new buildings being built are condos and not apartment buildings. So, like, every tenant in a condo is in a fairly precarious situation because they could, at the drop of a hat, pretty much be evicted. Obviously, not a ton of condos rising in Windsor at the moment, but who knows?
Yeah, not yet.
Not yet. Boom's coming, I'm told.
So what's your research process then in the first semester and going into the second? Are you working with a lawyer or is it mostly independent? How's it been going on?
So what we did was the facilitator from the youth center, she sent us a list of questions and she's kind of like, here's what we want you guys to look into, how to formulate your pamphlet, what to answer. And what we did was we kind of broke it up, got together, and we used the Residential Tenancy Act, our own personal experience, to kind of answer those questions. And I know I rely on Nate a lot because he is at CLA more than I am. And then the lawyer we have, he kind of will finalize our final product to see that everything is within the law and that we're not giving legal advice and just kind of sticking to the basics.
Yeah, like it's not really all that much different than any of our other law assignments in our classes. It's just the, added portion where we're trying to make it understandable for just anybody who may want to read it. And so it's really just about taking what we're able to gather from our research and then just breaking it down.
Is there anything that you found in your research or in this project that surprised you or something that you didn't know, either rights or just people's experiences?
I think it was eviction for me and how there's different types of eviction and there's notice of days. Like for if you didn't pay rent, you have, I think, 14 days of between the notice and having to leave. And then if they're kicking you out because the landlord's going to live in the apartment, it's like more than 100 days. Like there's a correlation to what type of eviction, how much days you have between getting the notice and then leaving. So that was interesting to me.
I think a lot of like my research has really just been like like a rehash of what I've been doing. I've been volunteering, I guess, a whole year now at Community Legal Aid. So I'm not really sure if there's anything new that I've learned, but I think one of the things is just, I guess, knowing when a tenant can bring a claim to the LTB compared to past instances where I've seen people, I guess, not until they have come to Community Legal Aid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like there's a lot of mixed messages, and I think like that's what is important about the stuff that you're doing right now. Even just when you hear people talking about it, there's a lot of definitely a lot of misconceptions and mm-hmm. different ideas about rights as both a tenant and a landlord.
Yeah, absolutely. What age group is the pamphlet? I don't know if we asked you that you're at the youth center. What is the target?
Like the demographic?
Yeah, like is it for people in the early 20s, university students, or is there?
I think so, yeah. It's like younger audience, kids that probably have moved out from their parents or living on their own. So I think the university students, because even I know law students have problems with their landlords, so mm-hmm. it's targeting that too, because even if you don't know how to read the law, you still kind of want to answer those.
Yeah, it's like 16 to 24 often when they're living on their own, because I think in this current housing market, it is quite the financial burden, and so just the fact that a lot of them are probably working minimum wage or underemployed, mm-hmm. It can be very difficult, even if there are just trying to make it on their own is their only real hurdle. Like, it's challenging.
Yeah, absolutely.
So a little earlier you mentioned the LTB, which actually stands for Landlord Tenant Board. Can you, in 5 minutes or less, briefly explain to our listeners both what that is and kind of what that process looks like?
For any tenant who's renting, whether residential or commercial, there is a lease agreement where you're permitted to use the unit in exchange for rent. And then this is under the Residential Tenancies Act, so that's what we're going to focus on. Commercials, somebody else. And so basically, whenever there's a dispute, the Landlord-Tenant Board oversees this. And so, for instance, if there's unpaid rent, the landlord will bring tenant before the board to come to a determination. You, under this lease, have to pay rent, and then they'll request an order to enforce that. Or an inverse of this could be a maintenance issue that the landlord isn't addressing. And so this would be an encumbrance. I'm at a loss for words there, how to describe it. It would just interfere with the tenant's use of the unit, and the board may come to a determination then that the landlord, having fallen below their obligations, will actually have to either rectify the maintenance issues, pay them compensation, or a mix of both. And so basically, it's the Landlord-Tenants Board's role is whenever there's any dispute that can't be resolved between the landlord and tenant, rather than going to a civil court, this tribunal specializes on these forms of disputes.
Is it a faster process than going through the civil court system?
So,
it can be pretty pretty fast and efficient, ideally. But I guess right now across Ontario, due to just the sheer number of cases, I guess they're actually experiencing a lot of delay. But ideally, it's intended to take these cases out of civil court mm-hmm. into these specialized tribunals in front of adjudicators that are, like, they've just seen so many of these disputes over the years that they have a certain level of expertise. And so sometimes you could have it just as quick as, you know, the tenant is back on rent. So then the tribunal will just come up with a resolution, like a certain period where the tenant will pay it back rather than there being an eviction. So this will provide relief for tenants, but it'll also help guarantee that the landlord will get their rent.
So again, you know, not giving advice, but it's good for our listeners to know that if you do find yourself in a landlord-tenant squabble, shall we say, it doesn't necessarily mean that you have to go to real court to, you know, exercise your rights or find some sort of resolution. It's kind of a, it's a tribunal, so it's kind of a quasi-court, but not actually, as Nathan was saying, an adjudicator. And this is kind of more of a problem than just in Windsor, right? As you mentioned, that the kind of the LTBs are getting clogged up across the province.
Yeah, so I think Toronto's like an especially vulnerable, I guess, market for tenants and landlords. Like, I think some cases are backed up for months. And so this is a problem for landlords because they're not getting their rent, or they're not able to evict tenants that haven't paid for months. But there's also tenants that have maintenance issues where it's just their place is pretty much unlivable, and they're stuck with this lease, stuck paying rent, and they have to find other places to live. And so there's just so many cases that the landlord-tenant board is severely backed up, and that's impacting just people being able to find a place to live.
Do you have any theories or thoughts about you know, maybe the bigger picture and why that is happening all over Ontario?
I don't want to get too much into the I guess academic side of it, because I'm not specializing in it, but I think it's my take on it is just a mix of landlords and tenants not properly understanding their rights and obligations. And I think just the cost of living going up.
Yeah, it's becoming ever more precarious. Just got to ask you before you guys leave, have you seen a Netflix show called Slum Landlords Nightmare Tenants?
No.
It's actually a British show, but it's now on Netflix. We've kind of been, I don't want to say plugging it, but certainly.
It sounds like a plug, but we're not getting any money or anything for it. It's just because we've watched the show and it's interesting, but it's just a British version of these kinds of issues. But that's a reality show, so it's more of a docudrama kind of thing.
Yeah, I don't know whether I should be entertained or disgusted as I watch it, but I think that's
definitely a combination of the two.
That's probably the case for a lot of reality television anyway, but worth a look, yeah.
Yeah, maybe Windsor needs a reality TV show.
Bring some eyes to the problems, right?
I think so. Okay, well, thank you very much for coming down. We really appreciate your time. And once this pamphlet is completed, where will people be able to find it?
At the Windsor Youth Center. They're going to have it there. And I don't know if they're going to have it online, maybe.
And do you have any other resources that you would like to point our listeners to if they want to kind of learn more about this sort of stuff?
Well, you can look at the Residential Tenancy Act, and even if you go Google, like, what are my rights as a tenant, you'll get forms that come out by the government that are laid out for what you can do, what your rights are, what a landlord's rights are, and they're just to the point and really easy, and I even understand them.
I'm sure some of our listeners will hit that up. Okay, thanks very much.
Thanks. Thank you. All right, that was really interesting. What'd you think?
Yeah, I thought that was great. Nice people, too.
Nice people, yeah. Any takeaways there for you?
Sure. I think just the idea, you know, I think a lot of our people might not be so familiar with this landlord-tenant board and this whole concept of tribunals, you know, which you don't necessarily need a lawyer for, but can still be quite, you know, legal mm-hmm. in their proceedings.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's still hard to navigate these systems, you know, even if you don't necessarily need a lawyer, or it's not, you know, a full on court proceeding. It's still, you still need to be equipped with the knowledge and the information.
Absolutely. And it's kind of intimidating, you know, just walking into these huge institutions, you know, that you haven't been to before, going before adjudicators and, you know, someone just kind of doling out an assessment of your situation. You know, just that process alone can be kind of heavy.
Yeah. And when it's personal to you, you know, it may be, you know, I'm sure they try as much as they can not to make it, you know, transactional or impersonal in these things, but it's still always going to be personal to you. So it is tough kind of navigating through that. What I thought it was interesting was the idea, I mean, maybe it's obvious, but the idea that, you know, we talk a lot about Toronto, we talk a lot about Montreal, we talk a lot about Vancouver, we're obviously talking about Windsor because we're here, but it's not exclusive to those cities. So this kind of stuff is happening all over the country.
Absolutely. Yeah. Except I feel like they're rolling in real estate out in Calgary right now.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. But different levels in different all over the country, I guess. You know, it's not always going to be as bad or as good as some places, but...
No, it's true. It is, you know, Toronto is certainly the headline-grabbing stuff, Toronto and Vancouver, with, you know, astronomical rents. But, you know, price of rent doesn't necessarily, you know, equate to difficulty in housing. You know, a lot of people look at Windsor externally and say, wow, what are they complaining about? The rent is so cheap. But the rent is rising. You know, the rent is rising significantly, as I said, by like 10% a year.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not even so much about rent as it is access to housing and the quality mm-hmm. of the housing that you're able to access.
Exactly. Yeah. And there's a lot of, especially with things now, there's a lot of like new immigrants coming to Canada, coming to Windsor, coming to these areas who are hoping to find adequate housing. And it's just, that's also tough for them too. And
totally.
And that's a new complexity.
Yeah. And I think like that's why the stuff that these guys are doing is also important, just writing it in really approachable language, layman's terms, as it should be, because there are a lot of recent immigrants, both across the province and the country, and in Windsor particularly, who may not know what their rights as a tenant are. And, you know, they're in a precarious situation, you know, easy to be taken advantage of when you're unsure of your rights.
Yeah, I mean, and we could do a whole probably series on the idea of trying to make the language more readable for the average person. I mean, we're vets now, that we've had a semester and a bit through, but it's reading some of the stuff. It's not easily readable by even for us at
Definitely.
This point. I mean, we're very new, but it's a different language almost.
The word my latest word is exigency.
I stumbled
upon it in a reading, and it's not too often I have to Google a word, but you know.
Yeah, because he's smart, is what he's saying.
I'm a word guy.
I'm a word guy.
It's an urgent need or demand, exigency.
Which there is an urgent need and demand for housing.
And I'm not saying that we shouldn't have the beauty of the English language, but at the same time, let's be real.
That's a bit much.
Yeah, that's a bit much. Anyway, thanks, folks, for tuning in to another episode of Pro Bono Radio. Remember that you can tune in to CJAM 99.1 anytime, anywhere, anyway by going to cjam.ca. And if you want to tune in next week at the same bad time, same bad channel, that is Pro Bono Radio, Fridays from 12 to 1. Next week will be Surratt and Akil, and you're not going to want to miss it.
Mm-mm.
So I am Graham Hutchings.
I'm Brandon Fragamenti.
And thanks for listening.